The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to Exec Chairman Martin Gilbert of Asset Co., a fast-growing specialist active fund manager with assets directly under management of about £3 billion to £3.5 billion. So welcome, Martin.
No, great to be back.
Yeah, well, big congrats on the recent acquisition of Ocean Dial, which specialises in Indian equities. But before we sort of dig into the details, I don't suppose you could quickly take us through the sort of key secular trends driving the fund management industry.
Yeah, I mean, they've been the same for a while for active long only fund managers. A big move from active to passive. We've seen obviously fee compression coming over the last actually probably five years. We've seen added costs being put on us to manage funds in a more ESG compliant manner. And then probably the most recent one. I've always said there were three, but there's actually a fourth one now, which is really quite a big move out of equities by pension funds, obviously, to bonds. And this is a good time to do that. I mean, don't get me wrong, if you're a CFO of a large company. But also what it's meant, not only that, we've seen quite a big move out of UK equities, maybe over the last 15, 20 years, and especially dramatic in the small and mid-cap sector as well. So there's really quite strong headwinds facing the long-only active equity fund managers at the moment.
Yeah, but I guess with the actives, because we've got, you know, just coming back to your point in terms of how higher interest rates, now that we've got a sort of like a reasonable, quite expensive cost of capital, it should be a great environment, presumably, for going forward for active managers to outperform.
I think so. I mean, I'm 100% confident that active equities is a great area to be for clients. But against that, you also have to be good at it, which is where we haven't sort of seen it in the past sort of 5 to 10 years. We've seen passive ETFs outperforming active equities. So it's been a tough time. But when you get rough markets like this, there's a huge opportunity to outperform if you're good at what you do. So I think the key is to make sure you have very, very good fund managers and allow them to manage the money. Don't allow them to be distracted. Get them focused on their job and they'll do it. They should give you the results you want.
Mm. Well, I guess one of the things about passives, certainly on the tracker side, is such that if you've got a low cost of capital, they become self-fulfilling because we've had this, as you say, we've had this trend into sort of like, you know, that free money into passives, and it's driven the markets up simply because there's more money coming into passives and they have to buy something. And you get it on the upside and you're going to get it on the downside as well. So it's one of those things is such that, you know, it's sort of like it seems to be money that is really just following a large trend. It's either all in or all out, and that's why we got negative, you know, Brent crude of -$32 per barrel in April, yeah, you know, 2020, because all the, you know, the actives came out of it.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It's everything is down to flows, and you can see that with fund managers as well, active fund managers. When they're doing well, money comes in, the flows come in, pushes up the stocks because they have to buy more of the stocks they have in their portfolio. And you see the reverse when they're underperforming. Yeah. Flows come out of the fund, they have to sell stocks, and prices go down. So yeah, it is. It becomes self-fulfilling, as you quite rightly say. I mean, the great thing, I'm on the board of Glencore as well. The great thing during that, when oil was at -$32, was they were all the traders in the world were loading up with oil at that. the problem they had was storing it. They then had to hire every tanker in the world to store the physical crude.
Yeah, no, you're right. Now, and just moving on to sort of the active side, can you just take us through how Asset Co is positioned today? Because I did see in your last, in the half-year results, 86% of your active fund managers were in either the top quartile or the second quartile. So you're doing pretty well. And also how that sort of like relates to your acquisition in Ocean Dahl, because you seem to have brought another sort of like, you know, top-notch fund manager into the stable.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, our fund managers are doing pretty well at the moment, which is always nice, and I think, you know, Ocean Dow could be really a good one for us because the performance is excellent. They're in the closed end mm-hmm. fund space, which we really like. And yeah, at Aberdeen, we had a long history in closed-end funds. We had 30 or 40 of them, and I really like the sector. So really pleased with Ocean Dahl, really pleased with the numbers, really pleased with the team there. And the thing now is to grow it. I mean, if you're in the right sector, and India is definitely one of the right sectors, a bit like global equities are, you see the flows coming in, and we've seen that with the global fund we have, which we bought in Edinburgh. It's doubled in size since we bought it, albeit from a very small size. But what we gave them was the credibility, and then they had the performance as well, but couldn't sell the fund or market the fund. So it's been really pleasing to see that if you're in the right sector. So global equities is, European equities, India. As I say, the area we're seeing outflows are definitely small to mid cap. That's across the sector. That's not just us, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely small to mid caps have been a disaster across the whole patch because you've seen so many fund redemptions, no doubt about it. Now, just in
and
terms...
all you need to do, sorry, Paul,
yeah,
all
please.
You need to do is buy them and hold them. Yeah. I mean, hold them for, buy good ones and hold them for a few years. You're going to make so much money in that sector at the moment. It's absolutely on its knees. I saw one at the weekend. I can't remember the name of the company in the Sunday Times, I think it was. I'm not advertising the Sunday Times, by the way, Paul.
Yeah.
Just to say I was reading it. And it was a company, I can't remember, a retailer, wasn't it? And they bought it on a P of one once you stripped out the cash. I mean, that's...
Oh, that was SCS. SCS probably last week.
Yeah. Unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, the valuations are just amazing at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just been driven down, but as I say, by fund. Now, just in terms of the point you made on looking at sort of like, you know, closed-ended funds, does that sort of fit in your long-term strategy of offering permanent capital and permanent sort of like alpha generation for the active funds that you do? Because if you're going to invest further out the curve and take a longer term view, then you need sort of like, you know, to match your effectively your assets with the liabilities. So you need to basically, you know, you've got permanent capital to invest in businesses on the long term and see those through thick and thin.
Yeah. I mean, look, closed end funds in our world are really a great area to be in because you're quite right, permanent capital. And, you know, as you know, one of our big shareholders is Harwood. Mm-hmm. They are largely a closed-end fund. And the great thing about being a closed-end fund is that you don't need to sell the assets when prices go down or when there are withdrawals. What happens is the discount widens or narrows. And that is how the flows are sort of absorbed in a closed-end fund rather than shrinking the size of the fund. Then you have the option, obviously, to gear up as well in the closed-end fund. If you really knew when the bottom was, you could gear up and buy more assets and see the benefit of that as markets rise. So, no, look, it's a great business, closed-end funds. And Aberdeen, as I say, had a huge number still, and and a great area of business for Aberdeen.
Yeah, well, you did a pretty good job for that over sort of 30, 40 years. So if you can do anything like that with Asset Co, I think investors will be delighted.
Yeah. It takes a long time. I mean, I think what I remember about Aberdeen was the first billion took 10 years, and then the next 25 billion took another 10 years, and then 300 took another 10 years. So yeah, the first billion is the hardest, and we're in that space at the moment. So, but the opportunity at the moment is fantastic. I mean, for a roll-up strategy, for consolidation in the industry, because there are probably too many smaller asset managers around at the moment, and I think inevitably the only way that some of them have out is by consolidating, by merging, selling or taking over other asset managers. So I think we'll see more of it over the next year, 2 years, especially in the UK space.
Yeah. And I know Asset Co's got around about £20 million of cash, and it's obviously earning some good interest on that at the moment, in a bank about 5% or 4%. But how are you looking to deploy that? Is it going to be sort of like looking for selective acquisitions in the sort of the closed-end funding specialist active managers?
Yeah, I mean, the areas we want to have a pretty narrow concentration. So a bit like we had at Aberdeen early on, and probably one of the mistakes I made at Aberdeen was going too wide in terms of assets. So the areas we like global equities. We obviously like UK equities, both large and small cap, and obviously emerging markets. So. And that's where I feel quite comfortable, in those areas: global equities, emerging markets, UK equities. So I think those are the European, obviously, those are the areas that we're probably going to concentrate our firepower over the next couple of years, I would say.
And how can you attract the sort of the best fund managers to the platform? Obviously, you've got a pretty good stable at the moment, but just continuing doing that, is it through the sort of, because you've got Christopher and you've got yourself on the board, that sort of opens doors and people realise the vision?
Well, I think you know, much as I think Christopher and I would love to be loved as well, there's quite a few people out there who would think that it's the last place they would ever want to go.
You know? Okay.
With Christopher or I, but yeah, we look. I think people want to go. People want fund managers want to work in an environment where they're left alone to manage the money, and also they have a supportive management, because managing money is a lonely job, and especially when you're underperforming. So my view is. You have to be questioning them when they're doing really well, but when they're having a tough time, you've got to be supportive and just say to them, look, whatever you do, please don't cut at the point of maximum pain. And please don't try and trade your way out of this. Just make sure you're happy with the stocks you've got, hold them, and it'll come your way. And that's where the great fund managers are good. They have that ability to hold and underperform, because they know it'll come right for them. And history tells you who these really good fund managers are that withstand the pressure of the external market telling them they're wrong. So it's a tough, tough job being a fund manager.
Yeah. And so if we were specialising on sort of active or closed end, et cetera, with overseas, with UK, European and emerging market sort of, you know, equities, is that the reason why you decided to dispose of the Rise ETF to Cathie Wood? Because if you're going to make it, ETFs tend to be sort of trading vehicles. And unless you're big like a Vanguard or a BlackRock, you're probably not going to, compete.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I have always, throughout the last 10 or 15 years, I've said ETFs are for the big guys. We would not touch ETFs. And then we dabble coupled slightly with rise in thematic ETFs. And yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, Rise is a good company. They had inflows in what is a tough market, but just not enough, really. I think obviously doing the deal with Cathie Woods was a good one, because she has a much greater history in ETFs than we do. She wanted a European platform. We wanted a platform, not necessarily to own the platform. So everything fell into place, and obviously she has the resources to build it, and in the ETF space, a much better name than we had. So it wasn't a difficult decision, and I think it'll work out. I think it'll work out. It's one of these deals, I think, that everyone wins. Yeah. The Rise team, Cathie Wood, and hopefully us. So yeah, I think it's. And also it allows us to concentrate more on what we're wanting to do. And it was the same with the private markets team. Yeah. Exactly the same. Look,
that was the infrastructure deal.
Yeah, the infrastructure team. Now, I mean, everyone in the long-only asset management sector wants to re-engineer themselves to go into private markets. But it's a bit like emerging markets. No one could ever touch us at Aberdeen in emerging markets. And my view is no one's ever going to touch the Blackstones of this world in private markets. So you're best concentrating on what you're good at and what you've got a name for. So for us, it's active equities, and that's where we'll concentrate.
Yeah, good. And then the last sort of like the interim, you talked about sort of integrating the acquisitions like SVM with, you know, Colin, and River and Mercantile together. How's that progressing? Because it looks as though you're probably now with £16 million of sort of annualized cost savings the business has taken out, you're probably not far off sort of break even, certainly on an EBITDA basis.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, look, one of the I made two very good hires. Obviously, Alex Hoctor-Duncan runs the business, but two of my ex-colleagues from Aberdeen who had left, Gary Marshall and Gordon Brough, joined, and they're absolutely crucial in the integration, because the integration is back office, middle and back office, and that's hard. It's very easy to integrate the front office in an asset management business, because you can do that almost on day one. But the back office and middle office can take you some time. But Gary Marshall's done it many, many times before, and obviously Gordon Brough has. So we have people who are deeply experienced in doing this. And it's going pretty well, actually. I'm really pleased with the progress on that area.
Yeah. And I presume, because it's quite a sort of highly geared or operationally positive type business, then any incremental revenue or mandates that you win now should drop largely to the bottom line, isn't it? Because it's a fixed cost base, and if you're relatively approaching EBITDA sort of like positive or break even, then it's just going to be all marginal profit now from now on.
And that's what I tell Alex Hoctor-Duncan. You know, Alex, Alex, you're not. I mean, you know, every pound you bring in drops to the bottom line.
So okay.
Do concentrate on bringing in the pounds. I said, don't worry about running the business. You just concentrate on bringing in their money. And he's good. He's ex-BlackRock. Again, you know, very experienced, good man manager, good leader of people. So, yeah, no, very pleased with the way very pleased with the way he's going about it, and he's very, very good.
Okay, good. Well, we've gone through the sort of what the key industry traits are and the sweet spots of how AssetCo is going to play in there. And I'll just highlight to investors, if we've got £20 million pounds of cash, and we've also got a, you know, directly managed business of about approaching £3.5 billion pounds. Just as a rough rule, it's 1% sort of like valuation of, or maybe 1-2%, depending on, but it's about 1% at the moment. That's 35 million plus your 20 million, 55 million would be a valuation. And your market cap's 55. And that means it equals the market cap at the moment. But, and this is the elephant in the room, you've also got, I understand, a 30% interest in Parmenion, which is a sort of specialist IFA platform in the UK for investment advisors. Could you take us through the state of this? Because I did see there was an independent valuation for it, which put it around about £75 million to £90 million, which is more than double your current market cap.
Yeah, I mean, I would say we're not alone in being undervalued on the sector. The whole sector is undervalued. But yeah, you're right. I mean, obviously Parmenion is an excellent business. We bought it when we were at Aberdeen, and Aberdeen had surplus platforms. They had two bigger ones, and obviously Parmenion was surplus to their needs. So we took the opportunity along with Preservation Capital to buy it. It's not, I want to sort of make clear, it's not our core strategy, this, but it was just an opportunity when we were starting up really to buy a very, very undervalued asset and be patient with it and wait for it to create value. It already has. It was loss-making when it came out, and it's now at about 20 to 25 million EBITDA. These platforms tend to trade at about 13 to 17, maybe 15 times. And we saw that recently with the sale from Caledonia of their platform business. So it's a very valuable asset. I just wish we owned 100% of it. I mean, it would be fantastic. But yeah, it's obviously a lot of capital tied up. We're very patient with it, so we'll just wait and see what happens. But again, it's a sector where there's a lot of consolidation. I would expect Parmenion to either be a consolidator or be consolidated. So it's a very, very valuable asset sitting on our balance sheet. When it'll be realized, I don't know. But as I say, it's important just to be patient with it.
Yeah, well, I just say if you add that on top, then I mean, I'm just personally on a sort of like a modest valuation, I get 80p per share. And I know the two brokers who follow Asset Co. I think one of them's at 97p, and I think another one's at 130p per share. So you're right.
Look, we know what we're doing. I mean, Asset Co. has a very, very experienced management team.
Yeah.
So we got good assets. I think the key is the key is Parmenion sometime in the future, and what else comes up and what's available and what do we do in the future?
Yeah, good. Okay, brilliant. And thanks very much for your time there, Martin. In terms of sort of future news flow, I guess you've probably got your prelims probably a bit sort of February next year or something like that. Is that right?
I think so. Yeah. I leave that to our CFO, Gary. Okay. Marshall. Yeah. But no, that sounds about right. Yeah, we'll update the market then. But it's going well. It's tough at the moment, but it's good fun, and I love the sector.
Yeah, well, you seem to be pretty much in an excellent position there. We've got lots of cash on the balance, bulletproof balance sheet. It gives you patient capital, and you've got the sort of the big stake in Parmenion that hopefully eventually will sort of like, you know, materialize into value and give you more cash. And then to consolidating industry with a great reputation and a management team to be able to, you know, pick the right spots to fight those battles that you know you can win with the skills that you have.
I couldn't have put it better myself, Paul.
Okay, well, good. Oh, look forward in speaking about 6 months' time. Thanks, Martin.
Take care. See you. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.